for their faith for me. And we are holding up for everything that is coming there now. From phase one to the last day. And let us call it then started. Good morning, colleagues. We should start. I know that it's a busy day today. So if you want us to go and direct your leadership there. I hope also today won't come with many points of order.
No, not today.
You'll allow the debate to flow.
I will.
Sharper, I know that you don't do those things. You're very kind. Okay, colleagues, you wanted very fruitful things. You know that the Rules Committee met, I think it was last week, and then mandated the chief to draft the rule around what we call emotional confidence. And the Liquor Department is here, or Liquor Services is here. I think what we should do is to allow them just to take us through, and JJ will come in, and then we have to deal then while we want to redraft the entire rule. Just to make sure that in the way we capture the essence of what the court was saying. And legal team, are you ready to take us through? Yes, sir.
Circulated a summary of the judgment that I did for the Speaker and for the Secretary to the National Assembly, so I will be referring to that as well. Then there's also just like a very short presentation on the judgment and the implications for Parliament specifically. As members may know, on the 27th of August this year, the Constitutional Court handed down judgments in, as we call it, the Majibuko case, and the parties were the Leader of the Opposition, the Speaker of the National Assembly, and the Chief Whip. And there were basically, the disputes that were at issue was whether the Speaker has the power to shift or emotional confidence on his own authority. Basically, the five applications which the Constitutional Court sought to decide on whether there was a leave to apply directly to the Constitutional Court against the decision of the Western Cape High Court. The second application, which is the most important for the discussion today, was for leave for direct access to the court for a declaratory order that the rules were inconsistent with the Constitution to the extent that they do not protect the rights of applicants and other members of the Assembly to bring a motion of no confidence in the National Assembly, to have that then debated in the Assembly, and then also have that accorded priority over the rest of the business of the Assembly. And the third and the fourth and the fifth applications are just basically cross appeals, and then and the third application specifically is whether by failing to schedule the motion of no confidence, the Parliament had then failed the constitutional obligation. But I can deal with that immediately, that the court decided not to deal with that issue, and actually said that they'll wait for that for a later occasion, that they won't decide it at the moment. So basically, I'll go straight to the constitutional validity of the rules issue. This was the second application, and the applicant, the Leader of the Opposition, sought a direct access to the court for declaration that the rules were inconsistent with the Constitution. The court found that the Constitution requires the National Assembly to provide a procedure that permits its members to deliberate and vote on the motion of no confidence in the President. Moreover, that the rules must specifically allow for such a vote to take place. The court also confirmed that the rights flows from 102(2) of the Constitution and that the rules may not deny, frustrate, or unreasonably delay or postpone the exercise of that right. So basically, the court doesn't say that it must happen immediately, it must be accorded priority over every other matter in the National Assembly, but it must receive you know, the sort of relative importance given the right to flaws from section 102 of the Constitution. So basically without unreasonable delay. And that can also then speak to how the rules are framed and what specifically the issue around the motion of no confidence. Then the Constitutional Court also agreed with the High Court decision that the entitlement to move a motion of no confidence cannot be left to the whim of the majority or the minority in that regard as well, because the minority judgment in the case speaks to the fact that then a minority party, given the present structure of the committees, that a minority party can also then frustrate a issue to be debated. So it's either at the one with minority or majority to have something debated in the program committee or any other committee of the assembly for that matter. Then the court then said, finally, that a lacuna does exist in the rules with regard to the decision making and to a deadlocking mechanism of the program committee, that the rules regulating the business of the program committee do not protect or advance advance the rights of the applicant in any other matter or any other members in the assembly in relation to the scheduling, debating, and voting on the motion of no confidence, and therefore they are inconsistent with the Constitution. As I already said, in the motion of a confidence in relation to inherently urgent, the court said it's basically it must not be unreasonably delayed. So not inherently urgent, but it must be done as soon as possible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, JJ.
Yeah. Is anyway okay. Look, I think that summary is fair. I don't think we need to bother about issues of direct access and all those legal points. There's a lot of legal points. Mr. Handlik Jr., can I call you that, or how do I distinguish Mr. Handlik from Mr. Handlik? Okay, the member of the table staff. I can't remember your exact title. sent me a whole lot of documents, but most of these documents are really, almost all these documents are really now academic. The speaker's affidavit, the Western Cape judgment, etc., we don't need those. The issue is the majority judgment in the Constitutional Court. And I must say, I don't agree with the majority judgment. I don't think the court properly understands the nature of our parliament, a proportional representation system. But having said that, one has to go. It was a 6-4. It's the majority judgment that counts. So I'm not even going to refer to the minority one. Now, where we were before was that we were talking about, and I mean, as has been said, it is it's really paragraph 66 and 72. That summarize the issue, and I don't think there's too much to deliberate. The judgment. Before the judgment, we were looking at, I think there was general consensus that even if there was a right, that it shouldn't be an unrestricted right, and that one member shouldn't have the ability to demand and get a vote motion of no confidence debated and voted on. Unfortunately, the court has said no, they can't. So this issue about first motion of no confidence and second motion of no confidence is now academic. No point discussing that anymore. The court did say, and it's just the one point that the legal advisors, they read the piece, and as I said, I'll read them as well. They did say that it is unnecessary to go as far as the High Court that a motion of no confidence in the President is inherently urgent and must be debated and voted on in the Assembly urgently. So they did overturn the High Court to say, no, it's not as urgent as that, which was more, I think, in line with Mrs. Killian's point that the first motion of no confidence gets called as the first item on the agenda the next day. So they said, no, that's not correct. And then, as has been said, they said it's sufficient to state the motion must be accorded priority over other motions and business being scheduled, debated, and voted on. within a reasonable time given the programme of Parliament. Once sponsored in the manner prescribed by the rules, the Assembly must take prompt and reasonable steps to ensure that the motion is scheduled, debated, and voted on without delay. And then 72 is just, I suppose the main difference is it emphasises the individual nature. That the Chapter 12 is inconsistent with the Constitution in that it fails to make provision for an unhindered exercise by a member of the Assembly acting alone or in concert with other members of the right to have the Assembly schedule, deliberate, and vote on a motion of no confidence in the President. Now, basically, what I would suggest, I don't know if legal advisors have given any idea to the framing of the rule, but I think that obviously an individual clearly has the right to propose and have all this done, a motion of no confidence, which means a one person party can, we could be debating motions of no confidence every day, every week. That's the gist of what I would see, particularly 72. An unhindered exercise by a member acting alone or in concert. But I don't know if there's a disagreement on that, but it basically, the rule would basically need to state that I mean, we really restate this. I think the scheduling matter is still a matter for the programming committee, and the only guide that should be given to the programming committee is the wording in the judgment, that the motion must be accorded priority over other motions and business by being scheduled and debated and voted on within a reasonable time, or the programming committee must ensure that it is scheduled, debated, and voted on within a reasonable time, given the program of the Assembly. So I think that's clear. The things like coming back for motion, no confidence is out. That's not necessary. The only issue would be where they refer to once sponsored in a manner prescribed by the rules. So the rules can provide for how the motion gets tabled. Not sure why they use the word sponsored. Rather than proposed. But I think the rules would then need to provide for maybe a particular day, or could provide for a particular day that the tabling takes place in the House. Maybe it could even be a restriction that it shouldn't be close to the end of term, because you know my concern there is nobody's going to do it this time. But you know, if you really wanted to abuse Parliament, you'd start calling for a motion of no confidence like every day just before an election, because then you've got more time to debate your issues. But anyway, those are things. But the only thing really would be, what is the manner prescribed by the rules going to be, and in a sense one would be able to put some limitations there, that it can't just be done every day, that kind of thing. Maybe once a week, or something like that. Or notice must be given to the speaker beforehand. Those kinds of things. Those kinds of restrictions could be put on. But I don't think there can be any restriction that it has to be supported by more than one member. I mean, what's bizarre with the judgment is that if you want to call a division in the House, you've got to have a minimum number of members to call that division. On a matter, but according to the judgment, it would seem that one person can call for and insist on a vote on a motion of no confidence.
Okay, thank you, JJ. Let me open then the floor for colleagues to comment. The data services, honourable members, support. Yes.
I just wanted to highlight or note that before the, or in preparation, if you'd like, for the Constitutional Court judgment, the Speaker submitted an affidavit which included some, I wouldn't hesitate to call them proposals, but some rules which he considered at the time to be the outcome of some political negotiations which happened prior to the to the court. I've included them in the documents that I've circulated now, I think at the back. They are not in conflict with the court, with the Constitutional Court judgment. So that might be a starting point for looking at what rules might end up looking like. For example, they include, they don't set a restriction on members introducing motions of no confidence in the president. But they do, for example, have restrictions on introducing the same motions twice. So that is another type of restriction which may seem reasonable. Thanks.
Perhaps, Chair, I can just remind the task team that a number of decisions that have been taken around other rules already deal with some of the problems that were identified in relation to no confidence. First of all, decision-making in the NA Program Committee, there is a draft rule which provides for that. Secondly, the amendments to motions are permissible. That is clarified in the rules now as well. Thirdly, the sequence in which amendments and the main motion are put at the end of a no-confidence motion is covered now in the rules as well, that the Speaker has the discretion in terms of whether to put the main motion first or amendments first. So that allows an opportunity for the Speaker to allow the party that initiated the motion to first vote on their motion before they go to amendments. And then also if amendments are put very late in the debate, the presiding officer may extend the time for the debate. So those are all issues that are already captured in the new draft rules as worked through by the task team. So that only leaves a couple of issues outstanding in terms of the no confidence itself, particularly how often and whether any kind of management is put in place over the kind of scenario that Mr. Jeffrey sketched, which in the world of politics is a very real one, that when circumstances are such that a party or parties want to prevent the National Assembly from conducting its work and its other work, and it may be a particular issue on the order paper that they want to prevent from happening, they can come with a sequence of motions of no confidence on a daily basis. And in terms of the court order, then it can be dealt with as a priority. And it seems to me that the National Assembly, I think, Chair, this is something that you've been saying throughout, that these rules are being drafted to last for a long time, regardless of the party in power. And I think for that perspective, it becomes important to ensure that as far as possible and as far as the court judgment allows, the institution and its function in broader terms, in terms of the Constitution, needs to be protected.
And that's the point that we should do, that we shouldn't abuse the institution. And because how many parties here deny? If every party can put a motion, what can be a problem? We should find ways of limitation somehow, which is with reasonableness, because you are not going to be unreasonable. Now, Cheche, you wanted to come in, and then
yeah, well, it's trying to take the issue forward. I mean, with the proposal that was attached to the Speaker's affidavit, I mean, look, the first issue is who schedules. Is it the Programming Committee? Is it the Speaker? Does it really matter if it has to be scheduled? I think on the affidavit, on the back of the document that was given out here, well, firstly, I think that it would be legitimate to set out a procedure for the tabling of a motion of no confidence, which could be things like that notice must be given, you know, that you don't just somehow read it out in the House. You give notice to the Speaker beforehand. I suppose it would be only on motions days. So at the moment that's Tuesdays and Wednesdays, the opportunity. Tuesdays and Thursdays. Or one could say on a particular day, one could put that restriction as well. Those are things to be looked at, but it must be done on the Thursday or what, but I don't know if there is much point. But I think it's fair to have things like notice to the speaker. I mean, it would be similar to I'm thinking off the top of my head, not be a bad thing that it must clearly set out the basis for the grounds for the motion. So you can't just every day move a motion that we have no confidence in the president. It must be for these and these reasons. And I think the rules could prescribe that. Okay, what are the reasons for alleging? They don't have to be valid reasons, but you must set out reasons. So those are kinds of things that could be looked at. So that's as far as number one, that I think that the rules could prescribe some detail as to what must be in the motion and how must the motion be tabled. And more could be, I don't have more, maybe the your advisors can look at that. I don't think it's an issue whether it's the speaker or the programming committee, because it has to be done. And I think using the wording that it must be scheduled, debated, and voted on within a reasonable time, given the program of the assembly, that those words should be used. That is adequate. So when we get to point three, a reasonable time of no less than 20 parliamentary working days, I think no less than 20 parliamentary working days should be deleted. Because it's not, what the court said is within a reasonable time, given the program, it must be accorded priority over other motions and business, and must be scheduled, debated, and voted on within a reasonable time, given the program of the assembly. I think the consultation with the parties, if it is the speaker, is in number two is fine. Because that's a consultation over when it's going to be scheduled. Obviously, if it is the programming committee, then you don't need consultation with the whips because they're there. But I think then there should be consultation with the leader of government business, not around whether it takes place, but when it takes place.
What would be your proposal, the speaker or the
programming committee then, So you basically have two issues. You have the one of how do you table your motion of no confidence, and that the court hasn't really said anything. They just said once sponsored in the manner prescribed by the rules. So we need to work that out, and I think we need to look at options for that. And that's our only way of really limiting it, as it were. And as I said, I would suggest that it is something similar to the amendments procedure, that it has to be given to the speaker the day before, that it is can only be done during the motions section, call for motions, that it must give reasons, set out reasons for why this should be why should be this motion. So that's the first thing of how is it tabled. The second one is then the scheduling, and that then seems to be programming committee, and I think that we use the wording of the judgment and that we don't have to go into the 20 parliamentary days. That's limiting the judgment. We could say if it can't be scheduled within the last sitting day, number four. I mean, I don't think that's in conflict with the judgment. Number five is necessary. It shan't exceed the time allocated for it by, again, I don't know whether that's the speaker or what, but by the programming committee.
No, the speaker.
Number six is out. I think that's in conflict with the judgment because that was a provision to try and restrict further motions of no confidence. I don't think you can do that in terms of the judgment. And number seven, I'm not sure where it came from. I hope it wasn't from me, but I really think it's a bit unnecessary. I mean, well, it's a bit nonsensical, you know. If it's approved, then there's no leader of government. If the motion is in the president and cabinet, then there's no leader of government business. They're all gone. You know, so that's just a side issue unrelated to the judgment. But I think that six, I would think, and I don't know whether the parliamentary law advisors agree, I think that six was an attempt to limit further motions of no confidence. I don't see, in the light of the majority judgment, how we can. So the same question rule, I don't think that can be used to stop a second motion of no confidence, unfortunately. Number five, I think we need, but then it's by the programming committee. And basically those points. But I think let's see it in terms of what is the procedure for the tabling of the motion of no confidence, where we've got a fair amount of leeway because the court didn't really say anything. And then as far as the issue of scheduling, that it must be the programming committee must accord the motion priority over other motions and business by scheduling, debating and voting on it within a reasonable time given the program of Parliament.
It's a bit difficult about that interpretation, but I think we'll go with JJ on the fact that we can't limit it. I mean, the Constitution does provide that we can put in place rules as to how to deal with motions, and I think the crucial point of the judgment was that there was no provision to deal with them at all. So I think we agree on that. I don't suppose we can really argue. We would certainly prefer to have some more certainty regarding when it has to be, you know, within a certain number of days. And our proposal beforehand was the 20 days, but it can run over into the next year. So if we're ending the term, then 20 days will just resume the following year. But I suppose reasonableness is what the court has said. The other thing is, we would also like to see some, if we're going to, well, it depends whether we go with Matsubatsu or not, but if we go with JJ's view, then we can't really limit any motions. But if we are going to have grounds, then we would like to see the Speaker giving reasons for ruling. If he says no, it's the same in substance, then he must give reasons as to why he says that. And, you know, obviously then we would agree with grounds. But if you're saying, I think JJ also contradicting a little bit, because you're saying on the one hand that we can't limit the number of motions, and then you were saying we must give grounds for a motion. So what's really the point?
Look, mine is 72, which is the rules fail to make provision for an unhindered exercise by a member of the National Assembly acting alone of the right to have the Assembly schedule, deliberate and vote on a motion. That's my basis for feeling that you can't prevent the second motion.
My point is then, what's the purpose of having to give reasons?
Because you can, the court did say under sponsored in the manner prescribed by the rules, 66 at the bottom. So they did make specific reference to the rules prescribing how the motion, they use the word sponsored, which I have a bit of a difficulty with. So although they do talk about an unhindered exercise, I do think that one means that we can say, the rules can prescribe how it must be sponsored. Sponsored in the manner, and I do think then one could use that to say, give reasons. We can't just form a debate. We've got no confidence in the House today, and we've got no confidence tomorrow, and things like that. But I don't... I unfortunately don't think we can, because of this unhindered exercise of the right, that one can have same question restrictions, but I don't know what the law advisors say.
Well, I think it can be possible for... We are going for a State of the Nation next year, February. Can it happen that on the 13th, the State of the Nation, a member simply comes up before that they didn't put a motion of no confidence. Saying that we should, don't forget that the court has given us that we must allow that to happen.
Yeah.
How do you do that? The parliament must decide.
Yeah.
Simply means that parties here, they must come to
almost a sufficient consensus. So this is the procedure. Given the fact that we are the party now, and then for years to come, of course, we always have interest to defend the interest of everyone in South Africa. But that's very important for us, because if we just play politics on this matter, then we can cause harm to the integrity of the constitution. Because we can filibuster the House.
Yeah. But Chair, that's where I think that, and it was the point that the Lord Biden left out, but that other point in 66 of saying it's unnecessary to go as far as the High Court, that a motion of no confidence is inherently urgent and must be debated and voted in the Assembly urgently. So they specifically said, no, we're not, the High Court was going too far. So we do need to take cognizance of that. That's why they use the issue of, even though it's accorded priority, they don't mean that you drop everything else. They're not meaning that everything must be dropped and that's all you do. So if a motion comes during the State of the Nation, I would think it would be legitimate to say no, it's not accommodated until the week after. You know, that's a reasonable time. It doesn't mean drop everything. So I think that's quite clear from the judgment that they're not saying, but it is, it needs to be prioritized. Prioritization doesn't mean you do nothing else, but you do give attention to that. And it must be within a reasonable time, given the program of Parliament. So I think the fact that they've used the words "given the program of Parliament" is also important. That it doesn't mean that we can get called back from a recess to vote on a motion of no confidence. I don't think.
I think ourselves we must agree on, and then the team that drafted and then draft that we have agreed. How do you want to do this? Because one thing that you want to avoid should is that you shouldn't, you know, that will put a lot of motion of no confidence. That we shouldn't really just make it difficult for Parliament to function. I think all parties, they are invested in the interest of all parties to ensure that Parliament functions well. Therefore, they should perform well. And then the how part of it, we must really deal with it, because otherwise it can cause unnecessary problems. And we ended up with parties again taking things to court and make it difficult. We shouldn't end up with a court anyway, drafting the rules for it. The court allow us enough space as parties to draft our own procedure on how this motion of no confidence can be tabled. I think that's what we should really look at in committee.
Thank you. Can I put anything? I mean, the point is if we...
Can we not ask Professor Mike Tudor to make his input before he...
Professor, you can assist if you want to come in. I know that you want another meeting. thanks, Professor.
On that motion, I mean, the point is if we agree, and I don't think that the judgment restricts us from agreeing that a motion of no confidence can only be tabled on a motion day, and that would then prevent the issue of the so nothing and whatever. I mean, it can only be tabled on a day that sets aside for motions, but I don't think that would conflict with the judgment. We say on a motion day, a motion can be tabled, it must be done within a reasonable time, so then there is no motion day for the State of the Nation.
Can I just ask clarity from JJ? Asking for an explanation with the a motivation or explanation, is that not equivalent now to a form of a substantive motion?
Yes, it is, but I think that why I'm proposing it is to try and put a restriction in by the back door. I mean, let me be open. But being cognizant of the court in 72 talking about the unfettered right. But I think with a substantive motion, the difference with a substantive motion is that the speaker's got the power to rule, this is not a substantive motion, this does not accord with the requirements of a substantive motion. And therefore the speaker can stop that motion getting onto the order paper. nobody can stop, I think, emotion. Well, why I'm raising the issue of reason is just to prevent a situation where technically you could have every week.
Yeah.
The House has no motion in me, no confidence in me, in the President. I know from when we were doing research, I think it was the motion that got rid of Edward Heath by Thatcher was simply the House has no confidence in Her Majesty's government. So it was just that. But I'm just trying to look at ways of stopping triviality.
Yeah, you can't stop it anyway.
Well, at least you can, I suppose I'm contradicting myself by saying that at least it can be an effort to say, if you want to debate this, you must at least say, give reasons.
I'm very happy that no restrictions, there should be restrictions.
Mm.
Because otherwise, it's not that the court never told us how we should do it.
Mm.
The court says, you members of parliament, you know how parliament works.
Mm.
But no one will be denied his or her right to put the motion of confidence. You must then design your own rules to accommodate a member of parliament. It's important for us really that we move on that understanding. And then that there's no abuse right in the general. I mean, it's almost an admit of course, but there's no abuse. The point that I was raising though, Chairman, was raising a point that next year, as far as the problem is there, the state of the nation is somewhere in 18th of February. I'm saying the point that I'm saying that can't be right that a member of parliament move for a motion of no confidence to the president.
But that won't happen because you're not sitting.
No.
No pain in it.
But we all know who you are, so
I know that when you speak, you want to close them up. They must allow other colleagues to say
that. Politics
you close them up. And then you can say this in Mother Sister, not family, that's why you come in, but really take your floor.
Finally, in first principle, I actually support the fact that we should say stating the reason for it, but although we must remember it is a political one. Because if one of two is different from 89 of the Constitution, 89 is a different type of emotion. It is where you must make it's an impeachment, serious violation of the Constitution or the law, serious misconduct. So I think we must be mindful that I would not, for instance, according to the speaker, I would say a member must be president of the continent of the President of the Cabinet in terms of Section 102 of the Constitution for approval as a resolution of the House, stating the reasons for the motion. Stating the grounds for the reasons for the motion. But you must not make that a sort of a restriction, because then you are limiting the right. And as I say, we must differentiate between Section 89 and Section 102. So clearly we should do that. But I agree that you can't just say we've lost confidence in the press. I mean, just say we've done this or that, and it's a political question. I think that is the first thing. Secondly, scheduling. Speaker must schedule the motion after consultation with the leader of government. I think it is correct that the speaker should check schedule. But ultimately, the time is not determined by the speaker, because that is programming.
Mm-hmm.
And we must just remember, when we went to court and to the constitutional court, the composition of the programming committee and its functionality was different, because the rules were changed thereafter. The programming committee was not taking any decision by majority. It was usually on a consensus basis. Now it's changed. That is where the majority can frustrate the minority of it. So what I'm just saying is we must just be mindful that we don't bring in new restrictions by putting the programming committee in charge, who will decide by majority, and that is what the court found was not appropriate.
come and visit, etc. Because if you go to, what I just wanted to say, then it will not provide interim protection to unhindered exercise by a member of the assembly. 66 says it must be within reasonable time given the program of the assembly. So clearly, again, it's a program issue when it's taking place. Reasonable time, there is a sort of understanding and law of what is reasonable.
Yeah.
But it should not be legislative to go back to court again to say that, listen, we believe that they are now frustrating this constitutional right, you see. So it would actually be better if we can define what we understand to be reasonable. So it would actually clarify for everybody to understand what is going to be an unreasonable request and what is a reasonable request. And then, that would be my... Then the issue of the notes. I can't see why we should deviate from Rule 98. Rule 98 makes provision for reading it aloud in the House and submitting a copy to the table or submitting it to the office. So why do we want to... I think we should actually follow the same procedure, although obviously due to the nation, it will be most probable that it will be read aloud, and there will be this and that and that on it. Then, okay, then the last issue, and I just wanted to say that I was listening very carefully to the chairperson, and they said, you're right, you come from something. We worked together for 10 years. So we understand. That's why I was so shocked that he was indicating that I'm the frivolous motion. By now, don't you? But what I just wanted to say was, if we go the route of when is it to be scheduled, etc., it is also, if a member, say for instance, a one-party member, let's say that Juju is here in the house. And he's here in the house and he's just going to make time to make Parliament unruly because, you know, they're new kids on the block and they want to see some sort of sparks fly here. The majority and the other party, we can, the motion can be scheduled for debate and only Juju and his friends rock up. There's nobody to debate with. That's when you play politics. You just give him the floor, he does it, and you just ignore him. That's not when the game is played. So the rules must provide for the politics, bearing in mind that this is actually a very serious matter. And that's why I didn't want us to bring in any sort of restriction that people can say, but now you are undermining my rights in terms of Rule 102 after the court judgment. So I think we should remember that there are other ways. When it is apparent that it's just a game that is being played, you play politics back. And you make sure that there is no such debate. Everybody is absent. It's only Juju and his friend. Thank you, Juju.
Just a couple of points. The first is, and the restriction applies to all motions, and I think reasonably needs to apply to motions of no confidence as well, that the usual requirements of no unparliamentary language, the grounds must relate to something for which government is responsible. Those kind of broad parameters of things, nobody can complain that they should be in place, and that would be grounds for speaking to disallow if those basic requirements are not met. The question of it impacting on SONA, although there would have not have been an opportunity to give notice orally in the House at that point, notice can also be given in writing. So that if there's already a notice in writing on the paper of no confidence, then that could impact. But also particularly because if the notice of motion of no confidence sets grounds, specific grounds for having no confidence in the President, and that's scheduled for the week after the Senate debate, then those grounds, you may not then in the Senate debate anticipate the no-confidence motions to be held the following week and the grounds for that, so that you'll be limiting the range of the Stoner debate if you already have a motion of no-confidence on the order paper. The arrangement always was, and it was attractive and it was followed by agreement, that no member would give notice of any motions until after the Stoner debate, precisely because any motions on the order paper could limit the debate on Stoner itself. And I don't know if that can be seen as a restriction in this case, or whether it would be a reasonable thing to put in, even in the rules, that notices of motion may be given from the week after Stoner, for argument's sake, so as not to in any way limit the Stoner debate. So that would be an issue. I think just in general terms, the motion of no confidence is used in many parliaments without any grounds specifically as a mechanism to allow the equivalent of, in South Africa we have the Senate debate, the President's address and then the debate on that. In many parliaments, the annual session commences with the leader of the opposition standing and saying, I give notice that we have no confidence in the government or in the President or whatever the case may be. And that is the opening debate in many parliaments. So, and that's a common feature. It's a mechanism that's used, and it's a way of testing whether in fact the government still has majority support for the year ahead. So I think the grounds may be useful, but we must just bear in mind that they could be limiting as well in terms of other debates.
I mean, in a sense we're going a bit around and people are leaving, and I also want to leave for the debate. I wanted to suggest that, this, as I said, two issues. How is the motion sponsored? There's a reference already, I think, from Sandy to the motion section. I would like options to be put forward of additional requirements, such as that these ones are important, they can only be moved orally, and they can't be moved in writing. That notice must be given to the speaker. The options, Debbie, so don't freak out. That notice must be given to the speaker, so that it's not something that you saw as somebody jumps up. That those kinds of ones get put down as options for how the manner in which the motion is described. Then I would want to suggest, as far as the, and it would include then the grounds which we specified, or would specify in one. Then, okay, there's a division around, should it be the speaker, should it be the programming committee? You've heard Julie saying, no, it should be the speaker, because the programming committee can take a majority decision. But the issue the court was complaining about was that the majority being able to say it shall not be debated.
Or a minority.
Or a minority, that it shall not be debated. And that is gone. Okay, the court says it must be debated. So I know the speaker wasn't that happy about this power of scheduling. I would have thought programming committee is fine, but I would want to, I disagree with Julie in terms of trying to define reasonable. Because reasonable will depend on the situation that the House finds itself at that time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's very difficult to define. And if we define it, we can still be taken to court when there's a dispute to say this was unreasonable. And I really think we use the wording of the motion must be accorded priority over other motions in business by being scheduled, debated, and voted on within a reasonable time given the program of the Assembly. So that's it. That's the wording of 66. That's sort of basically it. And then I don't think there can be restrictions on further follow-up motions. I think the issue of the time gets decided by the programming committee. There could be an issue of two was not with the leader of government business, was not a restriction. It was just basically in terms of having, because the leader of government business represents the executive, having ministers, because they could all be losing their jobs, available. So it wasn't that you know, the scheduling, when it's scheduled, there was also consultation with cabinet effectively, not whether it takes place, but when it takes place. And I don't think that's unreasonable. So I just wanted to make those as suggestions, and maybe the law advisors can look at options.
Okay.
I think the benefit of her stating grounds is that it assists, and this is not necessarily the purpose of limiting, although it does, given the fact that you might have many, many motions that are complex, it assists the program committee in respect of allocating time for a debate. So if you have two debates on the same grounds in subsequent weeks, the program committee can decide, well, we're not going to allocate 3 hours for the same debate, we're going to allocate 10 minutes for the debate. I'm obviously exaggerating slightly now, but that's the benefit of stating the grounds.
Yes,
sir. Thank you, Chairman. That's exactly what I was going to say. We could use the time, the benefit of stating the grounds. You could, I mean, let's say, for example, a motion of confidence is brought on the fact that the president isn't dealing well with Zimbabwe trying to invade Mozambique. And next week the same thing happens again. The same thing happens again. What they could do is, in the program committee, is say, this is not reasonable. So, threatening. I mean, they could use, I mean, the program committee could use the fact that it is, in inverted commas, vexatious to bring these motions for confidence again
under
the same issue. I mean, just, I'm not saying you could just the time afforded and when it is scheduled, that is not a limitation in my opinion. So that's the benefit of having the ground, and that will then address the issue of when it is brought or when it is scheduled. So in my opinion, I don't think it's a limitation.
The limitation, if you're using it to say no, I mean, you're saying, well, it's an assist, doesn't say this is vexatious. You can't say it's vexatious, but yeah, if it's for allocating time, then I suppose it could be some kind of limitation. Yeah, justifiable.
Okay, it seems if we agree really what we are going to do, then is the legal services, they will look at the traffic. JJ, thanks very much. Okay. I thought you are here until the end of the meeting.
Well, this is bigger now, sir.
No.
Yeah.
No, I know. But I thought that you are here until the end of the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
The meeting is going to end at 4.
Oh. Okay. Bye.
Oh, okay. The meeting is going to end at 4. Don't pack and go.
Ah, okay.
We are taking care of business. Okay, no, I think we then agree. We have captured the essence of what we do. And then I guess because it's something that I think we should be so wrongly. As if it's something that never happened anywhere in the world. It was created unnecessary harmful when there's no need for that harmful at all. And I think we must work it out now. And then accordingly, I think the legal services advocate ensure that then in our next week, that yes, next week on Thursday, what is the 14th, no? We are meeting on the 14th. And next week, Thursday, please come with a proposal. The written rule, really, in the form of a written rule. They must do that. And then next week, then we'll be able then to, of course, I think we have this thing, we have captured everything, parents got the tape here, I think has captured every aspect of what you are trying to do. And then but capture the rule in such a way, as we were saying, that all the rules must be very simple for us. And then not a very complicated rule that we have to go to advocate to interpret what it means. A simple, straightforward rule. We say that every rule must have a purpose and a meaning. And then have clarity. What is this rule all about? The relevance of the rule. And then we should do that. It seems that we can't limit this really. Once the decision is made, the political leadership, I think, will be reasonable enough that we don't also make it difficult for our own parliament as well. And then I think we should allow them to do that. Next week, then they will come. I think it is. Then they make that proposal. And then if we need options, we should have options. But I think there's almost sufficient consensus how we want to do it. We may keep on waiting on it, but I think it's very clear what we want to do. And then I think we should do that. I think Casper will be allowed us to look at it.
Okay.
and then to ensure that then is within our understanding in our faith position now. I think we put the programming committee, that should anyway, that should share with them. It's not our debating whether we need it or not. And then the grounds, I think, advocate will put in the question of the grounds. And that are not limiting generally, but it's to allow a situation. Should be on motion day. And then I think also for the point that we have raised would be very useful for. And then but I think we'll put that as part of the motion, as part of motion section. But this one is a very important motion. A motion that can collapse the government. I'm not sure if that has been in the proportional representative system. No, I'm not saying that if there's a motion of no confidence, more and we know that so and so is going to vote against the government party, we fire you the next day. We fire all of you the next day, and then the next day the speakers are new members. There's no constituency here. We put in new members on that, and then we vote against it. Yes.
You make the point that there are other ways of expressing no confidence. If the House votes down the budget, if the House votes down a bill with the major policy issues in it, then that's a vote of no confidence, and I think the executive would be obliged to resign or
resign. They won't resign, they don't apply
to anything. It has a problem, Judy. It was rude to make this thing a issue. There's something that has never happened anywhere in the world, where it happens almost every week in other parliaments.
But they make provision for the rules, you didn't.
But that's the point that you make it so hard.
You trigger response.
No.
Who turned this into a major issue?
It was our
honourable ruling alliance.
That's one of the first things. Would it be possible maybe for the legal advisor to send us the proposal of options before the 14th so we can consider it with our party structures?
Uber could idea as possible. And I can say they can do that. Okay. And then we have 14 support. And then we go to parties. Then the parties then they can. I think parties are very reasonable. Sometimes we over exaggerate the parties.
We will
is very angry at a certain point in time, therefore the whole parliament must be angry. We can derive and we do that. I think we are through all the near the point. And then we are through with the motion of no confidence. Then that's going to be something.
We have no confidence
with
most
of you.
Can't you
with
because you have no confidence.
And then they'll circulate them. Advocate, I guess that it's possible for you to circulate it. Is it possible?
Where
and then, of course, again, locating it exactly in our rooms. And which area of our rules as well. And if you think that is a very complex issue, we want to put options. You just don't want any options though when you are adjusting the rules, because it's another way of just delaying everything process. Even when we are saying that the basic principle for this rule must do this, is that the cost is irrelevant, and how it's going to assist us. We shouldn't have a necessary change. And then options, people then can take these options upside down. We end up not really dealing with the purpose, but dealing with what is the weighting of things. I don't think we really should do so. Yeah. There will always be lawyers in parliament in that way that you want to. The politics will be there. I know that we are here, the politician, not as a little man.
Man? I'm not a man.
Even the fact that we have too many responsibilities, more what was the situation?
Where?
Even then, we were
because I'm not on that task team now. I was just here for the motion of that one.
Oh.
Thank you very much.
You were just for motion of no confidence.
Yeah.
You are happy now.
No, I'm not happy now. I'm just going to go and do this today.
She's cautiously happy.
I will see when I get off.
And you withdraw those last few comments that made it.
Yeah, no. I know exactly. It has been withdrawn 20 years ago. That's why there's gender parity. Absolutely. Gender equality bill is coming to us because of this.
Ooh.
And then David will accept it. Let us move colleagues and give you some of the issues that we want to finalize today. And maybe you are just like me, coming for another meeting, I forgot my rules there. And
I can give you a beautiful colored copy.
No, yours is not really very useful. Because you color every page. You color every page and And colleagues, let us move on and what I will capture. What do you want us to do? Simon, I will with you today.
I'm with you all the way.
All the way?
Yes.
It seems you're very flamboyant.
You lost it all. I'm waiting for you to get there.
Oh, okay. I'm excited to hear this. Can we move then? Kasper, what do you want us to do?
Chair, we reached a certain point last week. Let us see where we were. I think we've reached rule 284, is that right?
284.
Yeah, specific rule because the money goals, we just started on that. So I think all we need to do is ask Advocate von Berger to present on the rest of the document, Chair.
Advocate, what do you want us to do?
In fact, Chairperson, we've reached 286. 285, we were saying, no, this is an old rule that should be deleted.
Yeah.
So we've reached there. On 286, there's just one question that we have there in sub-rule 2. The last sentence of that reads, the minister must consult a speaker when exercising a choice in terms of this rule. Now, what we are saying, we just need to understand procedurally what does that consultation mean. Is it a restriction that is placed? Because then we have a concern. If it is simply a matter of consulting the speaker so that the speaker is aware of what is happening, then it is in order. But procedurally we don't understand what happens then.
If I'm not mistaken, this is about different kinds of money bills. They're not money bills, but when it's an appropriation bill with a schedule and votes and details are mainly in the schedule, then there's one process that you follow. But in the case of a money bill that's still imposes a levy, for instance, but doesn't have an elaborate schedule, then you may just go the route of a 275, of a Section 75 bill. And therefore the minister would consult the speaker in terms of which process to follow. Do we follow the process of an introduction by the Minister of Finance and the first reading and all the rest of that, or do we follow the process of an introduction and referral to the relevant committee immediately?
Okay. Advocate, we are fine. Let us move then.
Thank you, Jason. The next aspect, next rule, 287, just to indicate that the note they can now be deleted because we have the money bills amendment procedure act. So that note can be deleted. Can I move on to the next one? 288. Here we have something, and I think this might go back to rule 285, which spoke about other people who can be the person in charge of money bills. And we said, no, that's an old rule. We have here again in sub-rule 2, after having delivered the introductory speech, the minister must introduce the bill by tabling it and any accompanying schedule and papers in the assembly, provided that if the introductory speech was delivered by a minister other than the Minister of Finance, that minister must introduce and table the bill on behalf of the Minister of Finance. So the question we had is this something that can happen? Is this is it appropriate for this to still be in? And I'm just wondering now, given Rule 2A5, which dealt with that another person can be in charge of a money bill, if this isn't also related to that, but we don't know.
See, I have a concern, because according to the Constitution, it is only the Minister of Finance that can institute. So this rule is therefore unconstitutional, as I can understand.
I think this does relate to the earlier review that the Minister of Post and Telecommunications at the time could introduce personal levies, for instance. I don't know whether this proviso is, I think it could probably come out. I just would like to ask whether the Minister of Finance, when its introduction of a levy, a fuel levy for instance, whether the Minister of Finance can authorise another minister to act on behalf of the Minister of Finance on that issue. For instance, the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs. Would that be unconstitutional for the Minister to do that? That's just a question I have in terms of the legality of it. But then secondly, also, if the Minister of Finance is not available overseas, and that bill needs to be introduced, I think in those circumstances, to comply with the Constitution, the President may have to appoint an acting Minister of Finance, and not simply request another minister to act on behalf of. And I think I'd just like to get a legal perspective on that. Sure.
If you want to come.
Chairperson, I hear what the sounding is saying, but I do believe that we have a Deputy Minister of Finance as well. and I just want to say, if we think about the whole concept of what is a money bill, it's very clearly described in Section 120 of the Constitution. A bill is a money bill if A, it appropriates money, B, imposes provincial taxes, levies, duties, blah, 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 blah. Okay, this is the one referring to provincial money bills. But the point is, money bills are described as all those bills who levy that are levying any financial burden on the public. And therefore, I would be very cautious that we must really make sure that we do not have anything. If there is an exceptional circumstance, then clearly the House can buy. I don't even know if we can do that. But I think we must just be very cautious that we don't write into our rules something that could be construed as being an unconstitutional provision in the rules. So I just want to go back to the introduction of the bills and the bills processes. But that would be my sort of gut feel on that.
So we must just stick to what is good for the also for the public image of Parliament. The minister can't go overseas when he has to institute things, and there's no way. You know, yesterday in the debate, Cook lambasted the minister so heavily that it became clear that it's only the minister who can say why was the bill not in front of them in a particular period. And for the sake of the public, she had the only one who answered. Imagine the minister has a blood and then goes overseas. Some other minister must take responsibility. Let's stick to it for the image of Parliament and our society. Let the Minister of Finance take full responsibility. Nobody else. No, let's not do it about any other mechanism to change the particular approach.
Of course, there will always be unfortunately. If a Minister of Finance leaves Johannesburg today, you are meeting a two and somewhere on the road got arrested. And then we have set up the budget date and everything is there. And then the minister is no longer available because he's arrested. There's no bail. you are rules to live longer than what you are. We are doing this thing for the generation who comes. They must appreciate that you have applied to your mind.
Okay.
And therefore, that you don't change the rules subsequent because they think didn't apply to your mind.
Okay.
And then also, we are doing this thing precisely because we won't be there forever. We are going to join sooner with the leadership this side. After 20 years, you know, I guess that you won't cry.
remain and fear virtually in civil. You won't be here to argue all the point that you are arguing. Therefore, writing the rules in such a way that you protect the institution that we have built here, that you don't have to, because there will be a lot of moderates sometimes, comes in parliament and they change everything that was established over time, because you allow in your rule a space for doing that. It's not a motion of no confidence. This one will be accepted forever if they have until you disappear. So that I suggest that we should do that here and there. It is a very important point, though. Have you understood?
Chair, I think we can accommodate Mr. Boyd's concern and Ms. Phillips' concern as well. I think we can leave the proviso out. If the scenario you sketched happens, then there's two options. The one is you postpone the introduction of the budget, or the other one is that the President quickly appoints an acting Minister of Finance to take over. So I think that one can be flexibly accommodate those things and insist in the rules on the Minister of Finance, so that you cannot get any court challenge at any point also to say that whoever the minister was not properly authorised or whatever the case may be.
Okay.
So the relevant section for the national government is obviously section 77. It's a money bill.
Okay.
And that describes what is a money bill. And that is very necessary that we understand that one. And that is why the introduction of a levy on the SABC, etc., was not well considered by the former Minister of Communication, Nyanda.
Oh.
He forgot that he was no longer defence and he could do sort of things, yeah. So he wanted to levy a tax 1%, but it was a money bill thing.
Currently being reviewed It is currently before the Standing Committee on Finance, which is looking at amendments to the Act. Now, one of the issues is that the Act, once it's reviewed, the Act actually requires rules to supplement it, to be implemented. Now, those rules will have yet to be developed because the Act is itself being reviewed. So, once the Act is amended, rules to the Act need to be written. So, currently there are no rules. Currently the rules that exist are out of date because of the Act, but at the same time, there are no rules to facilitate the passage of some of these instruments, which does create a problem.
Advocate, what do you want us to do?
Chair, I think given that it will not help us to really amend these rules then now, because the Act is going to be amended and it might just affect whatever we do, I would perhaps suggest that these rules be suspended until finalisation of that process. These specific ones that Perrin has indicated to
1991, 1992, 1993, 1994 and 1995. What happens in the interim, Chair?
Internally
then the problem. Yeah, exactly. Well, in the interim, what has been happening is that the Act has been implemented, and you see the Act itself is a procedural Act. It actually sets out the procedures for Parliament to follow. Now those procedures are quite detailed in themselves, they need to be, but at the same time they need to be supplemented by rules to a large part. So the Parliament can follow those procedures, they are the acts can be processed through Parliament, but for example, they can't. Parliament can't. I would argue can't actually really affect amendments to money bills because they don't yet have rules to facilitate the process. So it's very much a work in progress.
Just as an interim issue, the point where the bill has been introduced, much speech has been delivered, at that point that bill is referred still to now for the appropriation of the Finance Committee, and still for a period of time. But I think what happens in fact, and I think it's important that this should be captured, is that at the same time that it's referred to the Finance Committee preceding the first reading debate, it's also referred necessarily already to the Portfolio Committees, so that they can begin to engage with the detail of the votes that they are responsible for. And this isn't captured currently in the rules. I'm not sure whether it's specified in the Act, but I think it should be, that the PCs should be able to get on with their engagement with the relevant votes, while the Finance Committee or the Appropriation Committee is looking broadly at the financial proposals in the budget in broad terms. That's why they've only got 7 days.
Okay, we should start to work on it because the cry anyway is time for this. That there's not enough time to do some of the processes and the budget issues, committees are squeezed, and not to create any such problem. If it's possible for us to play the rules from the rules just to try and then eventually become part of the interest of the rules, then we can do
thank you, Chief. I was also going to suggest one of our legal advisors that's not here is dedicated to all the finance committees. He's also working on the Act being amended. I will consult with him and just ascertain what is currently happening. Is there any shortfall in relation to the rules for implementation of the Act? And then we can hear if he has any proposals and put that forward to the committee as well.
Okay, then 296 to 295, then we move on. Then it's possible, Advocate, that by when we've seen everything next week, let's say everything will be done. It's possible even before that. And then, because we don't need a detailed one, because the Act, I think, is going to be amended. All of the procedure, and then 296 is what you see. These are general issues.
Yeah. Chair, there's nothing really on 296. On 297, there we have the interim rules.
Okay. I think it's an interesting rule, just to throw out there. 296 is Mr. Hadik Senior, could you just outline what this rule means? Because I think it's an important rule.
When this rule was adopted, I was uncomfortable with it. It essentially means that when a bill comes before the House and it requires a particular majority to pass it, and that majority is not present, then that would normally mean that in the absence of the majority, the bill is rejected. This rule buys time for a process to be followed, I think it's 7 days, within which the House can again look at the same question and try to ensure that that second time around the necessary numbers of members will be present. If the second time around there is still not the required majority, then Sub-Rule 2 confirms that at that point the bill will have been rejected.
What is the purpose of ensuring this one? You retain it as it is. You want to amend it, but you want to do it. But for case, we are happy with the rule that is there.
My question is in respect of the Constitution. The Constitution says that the Parliament may reject, pass, amend, or reject bills. Now, this is creates something different. It says that if you don't have a quorum, then the effect of that quorum is that you reject the bill.
This is not a quorum issue. This is a special majority bill.
Okay.
If the bill requires a majority of 2/3 in support, you've got your quorum for any bill, which is 50% plus one.
Mm-hmm.
But you need 2/3 of the members to support the bill. And if, when you take it, when you put the bill for decision, you don't have 2/3. You have your quorum to pass bills, but you don't have 2/3 in support of the bill. Then normally that would mean that the bill is rejected. And that's the constitutionality issue. And I don't know that it's unreasonable to say that there may be circumstances in which there were good reasons why that's why it indicates if the chief whip and the most senior whip of one or more of the parties, which together with the majority party command at least the required majority in the assembly, if they can convince the speaker to put the bill again for a second time, in say a week's time, the House can take a second decision. And the first one will not be taken as a rejection of the bill. That's it. I think it's a practical provision. I'm not sure whether it would be approved constitutionally.
Chair, there's another question.
Practically, you see, in the circumstances, like what is happening now, is the national two-point debate, they're all running after it. That's why the opposition parties want to be and apply their mind. And if the intention was to collapse government, particularly, what does this mean? Will it save anything? Or what is its implication? So it prohibits any other activity that is politically motivated to take place. That's where the complication comes in. If the question of the chair was raising, if you are, the African National Congress doesn't tell us, the ruling party doesn't bring its members into the work process, what happens? You see? And then you are saying, no.
That's the second part.
You see? They go for a second bite. One thing that I must say, opposition parties have been insisting on us to bring our membership into the House and be able to conduct Parliament in a proper way. This bill creates that precedent that don't do your work and find solutions on the floor with other people. It does create a problem in the institution. Even the community.
And you area and page.
My understanding of what Mr. Boyd is then saying is that we should really delete this particular rule. And I would support that.
Which one?
practical terms, the issue is one of political management. That's the issue you always raise in here. If you're going to be having to pass a bill that requires a two-thirds majority, I think you need to make very sure, particularly as the bigger parties in the House, that you schedule it for a day when you apply the three-line whip and you make 100% sure that you've got enough members to pass the bill. It's a question of what weighs more, the passing of the bill ultimately, or proper political management.
I got turned my back, didn't you want
to?
296.
We're helping you.
Yes.
Very easy. Chair, it has become a problem that only if the chief whip and the most senior whip of one or more parties, you know, it continues being like it's getting in itself. And as a whole, that look around who is senior, and if it's a one-man party, how can he be senior or not senior? That becomes another new debate, who is senior at that particular moment in the house, okay, to assist into coming to a decision. So for me, it's not a rule that is very helpful, because it's working on getting out on that particular thing. I mean, we've said we're going to improve how chief groups are meeting and manage the house itself properly. And you can't have a rule that just empowers individuals on the floor on the basis of that particular issue. It's not a good rule. It will create chaos.
Chairperson, I just, when you look at the rules, you know, my initial reaction was to say, but when you really look at the rule, it's giving the majority a second bite. In other words, they haven't managed to get their majority there in the first instance. It gives them a second bite of bringing the majority in to pass an important bill that they should have had people there in the first place. So I agree that the bill, that particular rule, should be deleted.
But how can in my opinion,
present, or it's the principle of the issue.
Yeah.
Chair, if I can just clarify. First of all, the special majority, the ordinary majority, is 50% plus one member present. And then the majority of those voting in favour support, hang on. But in the case, and so special majority is two-thirds in support or the three-quarters in support and so on. There are specific provisions that require that kind of support.
Section 74 of the Constitution.
Right. So, but then you add to that, if you're aware beforehand that there is no quorum or that you don't have two-thirds of members present at all, then the chair can indeed postpone the decision on the question. But if it looks like that number may be present, and you proceed, and with all special majorities, it goes to the using the electronic voting system to ensure that you've got your majority. So the question is put, and just to ensure that you're complying with the Constitution, you go to the electronic voting process, and you discover that you're two members short of your 75%, or two members short of your two-thirds. At that point, it's too late to say, in that case, I'm going to postpone the decision of the question, because the question has been decided, strictly speaking. And that's the issue. If you can, the chair can postpone beforehand, but not once the process has kicked in.
Thank you,
Chairperson. I think I would like to start by saying, I don't see anything constitutionally wrong with the rule. It is still a matter of the democratically constituted assembly that will make the final decision. And I think what maybe is more important is that this rule should be the exception, because it should be political management. Mm. And you should not have this happen. But the problem is, if it does happen, you are throwing out the whole process that a bill went through, because of maybe misjudging how many people are in the assembly. So I think Mr. Heinrich Senior said it very well. It's about, there's nothing constitutional that we have to worry about. So in the end, it is a question about, is the bill more important than political management, or is political management more important than the bill? And I think that would be the question to answer in whether to keep the rule or to get rid of the rule.
Chairperson, it comes back to how important the political question of that bill is. It may be a bill that is opposed by opposition. Then the political issue becomes very important. And then, obviously, the majority issue is of importance. Then it's not a constitutional issue. Then it's a case of the majority having a second bite at the apple. And that is where there's a bit of a problem, and that is what Mr. Boye said. Mr. Boye's comments were that you're then giving the majority a second opportunity. They were unable to politically manage it the first time round, now giving them a second bite. And that's the problem that I have. I think that on an important issue like this, it is important right at the outset to ensure that you have your members present to vote for that bill. And I think if we can't manage that, we shouldn't have a second bite at that apple.
The advocate says you balance it against the bill for political management. But you see, we are dealing with an institution that must maintain a particular image of being able to change society, take its work seriously. Now, we can find mechanisms of how we want to deal with each other and work with each other. And when you are lazy, you don't come to work, and it's fine. It's because there's a role that we could be able to impose and work for, to help each other, not to come to work. But we have seen, for me, the practicality is, we also want to maintain democracy. That's the broader picture. How democratic is the rule itself? What does it maintain the tenets of democracy and make things easier for all of us? You see, it's more concerned about the majority party. It's not concerned about the other attendants of parliament. You see, it gives liberty for the majority party to continue soliciting ways making things to work for itself. That's my problem. I agree. I mean, maybe you feel that it, for the sake of democracy, let the majority vote. You see what I like about what the chief says. If you're for 265 members, why are they not in the House? 265 members, why are they not in the House? Why do you want to then develop mechanisms to make sure that 265 that could govern on its own can be in a fair way? You suppose practically during the week, if like today everybody is going to be important and everybody must be at work. So if you don't turn up at work, what must we do? Must we then re-manage ourselves inside the house? That's for me the concerns I have of the undercurrent and the motive of doing this. But I don't hear if you respect to Sina, as it does, he doesn't explain what originated this type of an arrangement. What was the intention from the start, so that you could be able to give the intention. So if I don't hear it, I'm going to then generate my own approach, because I still am not clear what is it that you want to do in this particular, what type of circumstances are we talking of that could make us to sustain the room itself. Is it to maintain the management, I mean, the working in parliament, you know, which are, I mean, as I said last time, the speaker was very clear. It's an obligation. It's important for members to prioritize parliament, to be at work in parliament. Now, this thing seems to be saying, you know, push that aside. I mean, let's find ways of dealing with it. And we've got good rapport, we've got relationship, but why should we lose the role to be able to sustain that laziness and not turning up in parliament? That's my only concern. It's not a bill, it's a bill. I mean, we know the process of the bill is very long, everybody knows. We all knew yesterday that the Marine Park bill is going to pass. You see, COPE was accusing us that we are misleading people here, we promised you the bill, and it's election time. They lambasted us very heavily, you see. It's their opinion, it's a party. They said you are misleading the public, or they're creating an impression that this bill. But what I'm saying that it clearly shows that members, is what we're saying on the point when we said that, it clearly shows that members who are here in the House are taking bills very seriously, you see. Now you are saying here, when the majority party has not done its work.
Okay.
You see, they've been insisting, Chair, if you remember, they look there these days, you know, they look around there, and forget that the majority of members of the EC until they have decided to go, and they say that, and the fool, look at the opposition, fool. And then they say, let's go for a division. Then the ECNG starts running around. We start running around looking for members. And it's been a good lesson to us. We've been then fighting, then we are introducing discipline, we are doing everything to get our members in the house. Because it's been a bad image, it's embarrassing the party. Our senior officers, our officials are saying, but why are you not in the house? Our own membership says, why are you not in the house? Why should the opposition teach you about the family partner? You're not taking institutions here. And this is my point about this particular
I just want to follow on from what Mr. Boy is saying. I initially felt a little bit ambivalent about this. It didn't really matter whether it's stated or not. But let me say so that I think the tenor of our rewriting process has been to establish discipline in Parliament.
Yeah.
And therefore this clause is against really the spirit in which we written everything else. And I would suggest therefore that we do in fact go along with what Mr. Boyd is saying and drop it.
There goes our tea.
I'm just going to say more or less what Ms. Ellis is saying. We are insisting that a committee cannot proceed without at least a quorum present. We are saying that the minister responsible for introducing a bill must push to introduce that bill. And surely we are saying that the majority party in particular, given that it has that majority, it is in its own interest to ensure that it passes the legislation it wishes to pass. and therefore it is incumbent on that majority party to ensure that they at least have the numbers present, and they can expect that the other parties obviously to support. If they are also in agreement with the bill, they should be supporting that there is a sufficient presence. So it is, as Mr. Ed says, it's a question of setting entirely the wrong kind of tone in relation to what has come before.
Okay. I guess that there is no political damage if we delete it, we put it aside, we'll reconsider it in future. And then for now, I think we'll just put it somewhere. And of course, I think there was a purpose at the time. If it, they were drafted, if I'm not mistaken, in the year 96, and we were there in 96. And I think we are better off now in managing Parliament than what we were in 1996. And that's why, in fact, it's review one. Because I say that there are things that we have taken as decision in 1996. Still, I find another very, they're not only unnecessary, but at the time of managing other processes, government of national unity, a lot of other things, and the rules at the time, and we have to accommodate the totality of this. But now we don't have, therefore, the new constitution and adopted national system. Therefore, every rule that we have adopted should not contradict the existing constitution. But at the same time, yeah, I think the point that you are making, the principle, we can use the rule to instill discipline. The whole time management matter. The rule must be telling you that we are there when you need a caller. The whole time manager, we are duty to ensure that they are members. In Parliament in Birmingham, you know very well that at the time when there was what is called tree line mix, and it's still there, but the meaning of course is gone, you know, now. That people used to live everywhere they are, even when they were overseas. They were coming back home, there's a tree line mix last week, I can't do anything, but you know now, without saying this, yeah, you know better now. That tree line week or not tree line week is a trade. It's a trade. And do you want them to draft the rule to allow that to continue? I think we are taking a view that will be responsible of our children. And then, of course, you are a drafting team. The bigger parties may reject what you are putting forward. But we are going to motivate why we think this thing should not be there. And I think we are going to win that. At least in the end, we are going to be fine with that. We are very clear about this thing now. Can't work. Okay. We are fine with that. And the 297, any point there that you want to take care of?
Yes. The interim rule had a rule that was very similar to 297, but in effect it's actually quite different.
And then Ian can talk about this rule and